season's greeting to all, and to all a warm welcome to the show, where we take a nostalgic trip through an entire series one season at a time, and consider them through a modern lens. I'm one of your hosts, Jack, alongside my international friend and co-host, Tony Farina. This is TV Admired when it first aired, and this is the podcast where we assess whether it stands the test of time. Elephant hunting season relocates to Kentucky, where Deputy US Marshal Raylan Givens, a white hat cowboy displaced in time, is forced to transfer back home after a justified shooting. He's quick with a quip, but even quicker on the draw. We're going to need an ambulance and a coroner. Season's greetings to the year of the elephant, cocksuckers.
Oh, I love it. Hello, friend.
Hello.
Oh man, this is a dream. So this Oliphant season has been delightful. And as you knew, I hadn't seen Deadwood before, but I was here for this. Michigan's own Elmore Leonard wrote these. We saw Justified, like, so it came out and I was like, oh, look at that show. And Lee's not big on like lots of punch 'em up violence, like gun violence, like she understands, and like cartoon violence. Like we just watched Marvels and she was like, that's just silly, good fun. You know, like, she doesn't care. Like you could punch cats swallowing people, spoiler alert, but whatever. She's like, fine. But like, there's some kind of, like, she's not going to watch a Jet Li movie with me.
Sure. You know,
that's not going to happen. So we saw the trailer for this, and there's not a lot of fisticuffs. There's some, but just enough. You know, it's like, it's not. So she's like, so I showed her the trailer for this, and it had already come out. The first season had come out. And it was just one of those things where, you know, your kids are of an age and you're just not right there. So we caught it on DVD just before season two. And then we watched it straight through. But like, so that was us. So, and then it was like, we were recording it on DVR, whatever, like didn't want to miss like edge of the seat, you know, and she wouldn't even call it Justified. She just calls the show Raylan.
Right. Yeah. Fair enough.
Yeah. So that's our lore. What is yours? How did you come to it?
I think I was there right from the start. I mean, I was such a big Deadwood fan.
Sure.
And I didn't, as we discussed, I wasn't in on season one on that, but I caught up. And I think, you know, by the time season three, I was live. So when I heard this was coming out and it was Timothy Oliphant, and so I thought, you know, I'll check out that first episode. I hadn't ever watched The Shield, actually, and I still haven't ever got past season one, I don't think, of The Shield, so I wasn't really aware of Walton Goggins. But yeah, I was in on this is, you know, Sons of Anarchy is on around the same sort of time, isn't it? So I was living in these kind of shows. I think they were popular and I was really enjoying watching them. So yeah, I was in, and I was in that time, getting some stuff from America over here sometimes was difficult. That was a period in my life when I had my means of watching things that...
I don't even know what you're saying. I don't even know what you're talking about. You and Chris Phelps. I don't know what you're saying. Yeah, yeah.
So, yes, I was managing to watch live along with it as it was on. And yeah, loving every minute. And I think we're going to obviously talk, I'm sure, about Timothy Oliphant and his progression as an actor and how much growth we've seen already, I think. I mean, literally in the pilot.
Yeah.
The change in him as an actor and how his presence and how he owns the screen and who the character Raylan Givens is just a match made in heaven, isn't it?
It really is. And so I'm going to mea culpa live on the air, live on the internet. So in my mind, I knew that the books were not technically about Raylan. Like, in my mind, they were about Art. They weren't. They're not about him. They're about Harry Arno, who actually is... there's a version of him in one of the episodes. One of the episodes of this series, of this first season, is the second Raylan book. Right, is writing the rap. Okay. So, Art Mullen... But see, what happened is during the writing of the show, Elmore saw Timothy Oliphant. He was on set all the time. This was Elmore Leonard's favorite thing of his. Like, he thought Rum Punch, he thought Jackie Brown was fine.
Yeah.
He said the remake.
Get Shorty?
Huh?
Get Shorty? Did he have best?
He liked Get Shorty
good.
Fine. Yeah. And he liked Get Shorty. He liked Get Shorty Fine. And it was enough that he saw Get Shorty and then wanted to write Be Cool. So he wrote a sequel. The Be Cool sequel was written because he liked the movie. And he was like, oh, I see what I can do with Chili Palmer. And I thought the sequel, I read both books. I thought the sequel movie was fine. I thought it was good. And so this was the same thing where he saw this and was like, oh, this is so good. So then he writes Raylan, the third book in the series. And that one is so art, you know, like that book. And again, I haven't gotten back around to it. So it's like in my mind, but then I was like, I've read so much Elmore Leonard books and I read these, you know, 15 years ago. So in my mind, I was like, oh, I know there's another character. It must be Art. And it isn't Art at all. Art's not in these. But then I'm thinking, like, what book is it? So this is going to make me do a full Elmore Leonard reread. Like I read the Jack Foley, Kieran Sisko books recently, or not recently, whatever, when just because we were talking about Out of Sight. So I was like, I'm going to just do that. So I watched Out of Sight and I reread the book. And then obviously, you know, because we were talking about Jennifer's acting ability with Statham v. Clooney. And one is better than the other.
One is
nothing to do with acting at all. Right? Dennis Farina shows up in there. And so so I think I may decide to just do, I actually have all of his Westerns. I've only read a couple of those. And then I loved the Kieran Sisko show, of course. And I think Kieran shows up in the short story collection that Fire in the Hole is in. Mm-hmm. So I've just kind of been in this. So I'm wondering if somewhere in there, all of that is to say, if I'm mixing, there's a book series about like a grumpy police captain in Elmore Leonard's, and it might be Freaky Deaky. I don't know. All I know is I got it mixed up. So I'm saying it out loud. I was wrong, but I'm just happy to be wrong. I reread the books. You've read them now.
Well, I'm 2/3 of the way through Pronto.
Pronto, the first one.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yep. And so the second Pronto, the second book.
That's Riding the Rap. Yeah.
Riding the Rap is the Fixer episode.
Right. Okay.
Is based on that. And then obviously Fire in the Hole is based on the story Fire in the Hole. And did you read that yet?
Pilot, yeah. No.
Oh, man. So good. Almost word for word. It's like.
Just because I had Pronto available.
Yeah.
To
yeah.
Me. I got that through, I don't know if through Kindle. Yeah. I don't know why I'm being funny about saying it.
Yeah.
They don't need any more
promotion.
They don't
care.
They're not, not going to care about the promotion they're getting here for free.
Yeah.
Whereas the rest, I arrived today in the post, actually, so it was a good post day.
Fantastic.
So now I could just go on the full Raylan journey,
It's a lot of fun. And they're, and as you said, Elmore Leonard is very readable. And it, I think what we'll see in the conversation we'll have as you're reading them and as we go through these books, or through the series and the books, is that Leonard translates to TV better.
Yeah. Yeah.
Than he does to movies. And I think this... And again, this is his favorite thing. And then when he wrote the third book, Raylan, he actually put Oliphant on the cover.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the later seasons, that episode, they turned that book into one of the episodes with the woman who plays cards, the poker player. Yeah, so it's good. I just love it. So I'm excited for this. I'm glad we decided to come back to Seasons of Greetings with this. We're going to do the same thing, right? There's not really... worst. There's going to be least favorite, but there's nothing bad. Even this, the one that I have marked down as my worst, is still really good TV. It's a good piece of episodic TV. Like, this is kind of like you mentioned Sons of Anarchy, which I've not watched, but that's Hamlet, right?
That's Hamlet, right? Yeah.
So I feel like I should, but there's a lot, you and I may have a lot to say about Fathers and Sons.
Yeah, we might.
And there's even an episode in season one called Fathers and Sons.
There is, yes.
There is.
So and Sons of Anarchy is playing with that idea all the way through, obviously being
right.
Hamlet. And
you
of
brought
course,
that up. Yeah, you brought that up. And because I was thinking about that with this, and I wasn't even thinking about Sons of Anarchy, but you just said it. I was like, oh, and I didn't realize they were out at the same time. That was Ron Perlman.
Ron Perlman, yeah, and Charlie Hunnam, yeah. I mean, I don't think necessarily exactly the same year, but it was all around this period, wasn't it? Sort of The Wire had finished. And then maybe a year or two went by, everyone was looking for the new Wire, and we could start to get things like Justified and Sons of Anarchy.
Because The Wire was on Showtime, right?
The Wire was HBO.
HBO, okay. So that's the interesting thing, is that you see this progression. So like the reason I ask is because Deadwood, The Wire, HBO, right? Mm-hmm. Hardcore rated R shows. And these are on FX, right? Mm-hmm. This is on FX, this and Sons of Anarchy. And so it was this move from prestige television to cable, regular basic cable. And that's what FX does. And because FX is where Always Sunny started. You know, it's like this idea of we can push the boundaries and we can say shit and goddamn and whatever. And then Raylan goes to Detroit, City Primeval, they all the fucks and asses and, you know,
yeah,
it's all no holds barred. And it's funny thinking what they would have done without those restrictions here. I don't know. I think that can be part of our conversation in the through the modern lens, is what they had to, what they had to do in 2010 versus what they could have done in 2023, having now seen City Primeval.
Yeah, I think it suits the character though, doesn't it? It suits the character for him to be minding his P's and Q's a little bit, and for him to sort of be a bit polite, and, you know, as Winona calls him in the show, he's the angriest man she's ever met.
Man she's ever met. Yeah.
But he's not the rudest man you've ever met, and he's not a man without morals. He's not a man without principles. He's angry, but yeah, he controls that and he tempers that most of the time. So I don't think Raylan really needs to be an effer and a blinder and a this and a that, because I don't think that's who he is. I think because he's having to keep such a lid on himself all the time.
Yeah,
It's part of it.
I totally agree. I could not agree more. And I think it's because they do it in the next one. But even then, it's not him. Mm-hmm. He still says shit and, you know, he still does the stuff, but it's not the same. He doesn't unleash the F-bombs. You let the villains unleash the F-bombs. But Boyd wouldn't.
No.
And so, again, it works. So the way that Boyd is written,
mm-hmm,
for Walton, because he was not supposed to make it past the pilot, and he didn't want to do the show. Walton Goggins was like, I don't know that I want to play a white supremacist. And they're like, no. I guess Graham Yost called him up when he passed on it and was like, no, he believes it. The white supremacy thing is not what he believes.
No, yeah.
And he's like, he's in on the game. And so that's what got Walton to do the role, was when Graham told him, play it this way.
Yeah. Supremacist for now, because that suits Boyd's agenda. Don't worry.
Yeah, don't worry.
It will change. Exactly. It will change when he's a new agenda. Yeah.
Yeah, and I think that's what allowed him to want to come do make it more complicated. Yeah, so it's so good. So as we talk about, Graham Yost created the show. Elmore Leonard is a supervising producer on this. He was there. He wasn't like on set, but he was around. They definitely consulted him. This was not one of those like the Spencer for Hire TV shows where Robert Parker even said, consulting producer meant every week I got a paycheck and I took it to the bank and put it, I took it out of the bank and put it in there. And then my wife bought something that we needed. That's what consulting producer was. He had nothing to do with those shows at all. That is not this. Elmore was, you know, he was around and they all got to know him. And obviously, and what I didn't know as we were bringing this up is that Elmore's son has written a fourth book, Raylan Goes to Detroit. So I don't know if that is his take on City Primeval, because the book City Primeval does not feature Raylan Givens.
No, I didn't realize that till listening to it. It's a totally different character, isn't it?
Yeah, but it's the same plot. And that character that it is, that he's the one in the show, he's the one who put him away before. So they mention him, and then almost the rest of it's the same.
Okay. All right.
You know, it's very good. Very good. But again, just that one felt more like in the Freaky Deaky universe, which is a great book. And the film is Crispin Glover and Christian Slater. And it's like a hot, it's one of those ones that you're like, when everybody was making that, Elmore Leonard was just like cash and checks and like there, everybody can make a movie about. So there's a lot of Elmore Leonard movies. He did say about the Michael Caine Big Bounce that it was the worst film he'd ever seen since the first Big Bounce.
Yeah, I read that too.
It's amazing. It's like, I can't believe, why do they keep trying to make that? Yeah. And it's cool. He's created a cool shared universe.
Yeah.
All these characters exist in the same universe. So that means Raylan Givens and Karen Sisko and Jack Foley all exist. My dream is that Karen showed up in this.
Yeah, that would have been cool.
It would have been amazing. And they could have got, you know, Carla to do it.
I was going
to
say, yeah.
Could you imagine? They couldn't do it because they're like, that's too steamy. Like, that's too sexy for TV.
Yeah.
The two of them on screen together. Good God.
Yeah, it's true.
But that's the dream. Still the dream. She still looks great. She's still acting. He still looks great. They both aged remarkably well.
Yeah, yeah.
She, of course, has a painting in her attic. Timothy Oliphant does not. He's just aged remarkably. Carla, Rob Lowe, and John Stamos are all posing together, and that picture's up in an attic, and they're, I don't even understand. So This is good. So we're not going to do that. So this show is, we'll just talk through it like we do. Same thing. Yeah. We're going to do favorite, best. We're going to do least favorite. And then we'll do Modern Lens. Because I don't think it's 78 episodes. And I don't think there's one. There is no bad beer here, is there?
Well, let's hope not. There certainly isn't in season one. And season one is the rockiest, weakest season. Because it's, as a lot of them are, they're still finding their feet. They're doing some by the weeks. And they're thinking, at what point do we want to take it forward? And as much as I love Goggins as Boyd in every iteration of that character, they are figuring out what to do with him in this season. They want Walton Goggins, but they don't quite know what to do with Boyd yet. I don't think, anyway, personally, in this season. So it's a little bit bitty, but it's not at any point actively bad.
No, not at all. Not at all. And it's funny because of the way he moves, the way that he walks, Walton's portrayal of Boyd and the way he buttons his shirt up and puts his hands in his pocket. Years ago, I don't remember what, we have a nephew who's, you know, he's younger. He was a little boy at the time. And when, you know, this was out and he was walking, I was like 3 or 4. And I don't know what he had done, but he had somehow buttoned his shirt all the way up and he was standing there with his hands in his pockets. And Lee and I were just like,
Little Boyd.
It was crazy. Yeah. Because especially the way that it ends, you know, you're like, look, there he is. So funny. Anyway.
No, I was just saying, it's interesting picking out the physicality because they both do it, don't they? They both have this real physical performance they do because Oliphant's got a very particular gait and a particular walk anyway, but he exaggerates it even more here.
It's
Raylan,
the cowboy boots. So that's the thing. Yeah. It was there in Deadwood, but because he's not walking in cowboy boots, he's walking in shit kicker mud boots because the place is, but he's in the cowboy boots here. And there is definitely a way that he walks in the cowboy boots.
He's got that. Yeah. That, you know, that, like, I've been riding my horse for too long, kind of stiff legged gait. Yeah. It's brilliant. I absolutely love it, but you could silhouette them to both of them, Boyd and Raylan.
Yeah. And you know who they are.
Instantly recognize it. Yeah. It's great.
Yeah. And it's the way that he walks with his hands. And it's like, what's the temperature? And I like, Boyd is always dressed for it to be winter. And I know people in Kentucky, they don't like cold, you know, because it's like, it is only cold a couple of months a year there. So it hits them hard and it very rarely snows. But Boyd is always dressed for winter. It's like, what is the temperature, friend? What's happening there?
Arlo as well, actually. That's interesting. Arlo does that too. Yeah,
it is true. He does. Yeah. It's so funny. In the book, I found this particularly interesting and again, Elmore Leonard, a guy from Michigan, he writes about Raylan's accent as not deep south, but just south of Ohio. Mm-hmm. And when I said that to Lee yesterday, I was like, oh, I forgot that he said this. And she just laughed. She was like, ah, because that's it. Like, if you are from the area, there's actually even southern Ohio, not Cincinnati, but the rest of southern Ohio, that accent is there. Once you get to a certain point, this is what they sound like. And I think they nail it really, really well across the board. All of the Kentuckians get that accent. Nobody overdoes it. Nobody is making fun of it. And I think that's a hard thing to do because Eastern Kentucky is this. It's this. This is what it is. It's a bit of a this. They say hollow, and it's spelled hollow.
Sure.
And so it's really easy to make fun of them. And so I guess, when you're watching this, like, what is the, and then we'll start getting into it, but what did you make of the characterization of this part of America? Did you feel like the performers and Graham Yost and the showrunners were making fun of it? What was that like as a person who doesn't know the area?
Yeah, no, never. I mean, it's not somewhere I've got high on my holiday destination list, I'll be honest. But no, it's never, but I think because Raylan is our point of reference, is our character that we're following, he's, you know, very much a protagonist. Deadwood, we kept speaking about ensemble and here it is the Raylan show. It might as well be called Raylan, although, you know, Boyd is such a strong presence, and most of the, you know, Art and Tim and everyone are good in their roles. And I think we need to talk about the fact that right from the pilot, it's pretty scary how perfect everyone already is as an actor, as their character.
100%.
It's mad. Like, everyone is like Rachel, and like, everybody's just like, oh yeah, that's who you are for 6 seasons and you're already in the pilot. It's amazing. Yeah. But I think because it's such a Raylan focused show, and because he's going with that negative outlook, but you can't help but have that kind of nostalgia for where you grew up to an extent. You just totally feel that as an audience member.
Yeah.
You feel like you're seeing it through his eyes, and he's going to pick out on all the things he doesn't want to see and all the negative aspects. But also you can't help but think about the fact that, you know, that was where he grew up, and that they were his friends there, and this is where he did used to hang out. And he has these little moments, these little pangs. And I think that all comes across brilliantly. Now, I don't think it ever feels like an indictment of the area, even when it's, you know, meth cookers out, or it's, we're not there yet, but later seasons when it's what could be deemed quite stereotypical characters. I guess in this one, Dewey is the closest we get to being that kind of real.
Dewey's but even Florida. He's,
yeah, but I mean, even he's not like, there's depth to it, isn't there? There's depth to everybody and to everything you're seeing, I guess is what I'm trying to say.
No, I agree. And that actor is from Australia.
Oh, wow, that's amazing.
Isn't that outrageous? He's, okay, so Dewey Crow and Dickie Bennett are like, one in 1A favorite recurring characters. For and the actors' performances. Obviously, Dickie Bennett, like when I was telling you I watched Lost, and he shows up and Lee and I were like, Dickie Bennett! Like, the actor is Dickie Bennett forever and ever. Jeremy Davies, what he contorts himself into. And the same thing. That is such a tough role. And he's Australian. He's doing it with that accent, and he's doing Dewey's accent, which is that Dewey's from Florida, but he's by way of that part of the dumb South. And he's just dumb. It has nothing to do with where he's from. He's just an idiot. So, yeah. No, I agree. There is a sense of humanity in everybody, and they're all desperate. And when you get to the Fixer show, the one that is based on the book, and that character, the Harry character, who's a different name here, he hates it there. There's this outsider thing. One of the outsiders will come up here pretty soon on my favorite episode, has a really negative opinion of the area.
That comes back.
It does. Yes. And then as the villains roll through the season, the non-local villains, they all have a very particular viewpoint of the area, and that actually works against them sometimes, because Raylan also wants to get the fuck out, but those, like you said, these are his people.
Yeah, he never underestimates anybody, and everybody who comes there does and loses every single time.
Every time.
So again, that in itself is a clear commentary that, don't know, to underestimate these people because of the way they talk, because what you think of where they live, or yeah, I think that is definitely all there to be read into, 100%.
Yeah, I think it's just spectacular work. It's some of the greatest care. I mean, we talked about how Deadwood is like character actor 101, but this is the continuation of that. And there's that sense of like, what does it mean to be a good character actor? And is that a bad thing? And it's like, there's clearly a leading man here, but Boyd turned being a character actor into being a star. As did all of those, you know, and when you look at Deadwood and you look at the people who show up in here, character act, and they're all working. It's not like they're not working.
It's true. And both of them clearly mates with Oliphant from Deadwood, because barely an episode goes by without a actor from Deadwood appearing in season one of Justified.
Amazing.
There's so many of them. It's brilliant.
Yeah. And they just walk. And and it's too bad, though, that Hawks didn't show up.
Yeah. I guess maybe he's probably big by now, isn't he? I think he's probably had a Winter's Bone has happened by now, I think. And
he got his Oscar nom, and he did. He did get one for Winter's Bone, and he did the one where he with the water dance with Helen Hunt.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. Sure. Yeah. Yeah.
So I think probably he's gone in his direction. So I think he's probably not in an arrogant way. He's probably too big. Whereas, you know, get Dan Doherty in. Yeah. Great.
Absolutely. He's awesome that episode 8.
Get Johnny in. Yeah, get Johnny in. Great.
I know. Yeah. So, and they're good. And they show up and they know what they're doing, and there's obviously chemistry there. And why not do it in you know? And again, I watched them and I didn't know until
of course,
now.
The
I
first
know.
Time you
so
watched
for
it,
you,
yeah.
It's like, yeah, when I watched it the first time, I'm like, who's that? You know, you recognize that guy. But even like the fact that you take like Nick Searcy, who's second billing in this series as Art Mullen, he's just a character actor. He just plays this guy. He's fucking great as this guy.
Oh, he's amazing. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, and I think the standout, I mean, and I think Erica, of course, we know her from Firefly. She's got one episode of Firefly. And every time I see her, though, she's always like, Rachel. Look, there's Rachel. And and obviously, I think Jacob Pitts, never seen him, still haven't seen him in anything else. Like, no, this that's is the interesting thing. He's so amazing as Tim. And it could just be, they're like, listen, you're just another short white guy. We got a lot of those. So he, because he doesn't, he's not Oliphant good looking, and he's not unique like some of the other character actors, or maybe he just made so much money he's happy. I mean, I've looked his IMDb, he's busy, it's not like he's not working. But and same with Erica, you know, she's continued to work and stuff, but I just they're really good, they're really great as part of the office, as it were, right?
Yeah,
you know, you need an office, and they're it, they're the three, Art and Tim. But I think Nick Searcy is exceptional.
Yeah, I agree, because he's got a difficult role to play, because he has to play that kind of ball busting boss, that kind of stereotypical, but not really, but you have to sort of think of him in that way. And then, but he has to have that kind of shorthand with Raylan, because they talk, you know, gun training together, and
yeah, they know each other. Yeah,
I think the character has such a hard line to walk with Raylan, but that's also doubly hard for Nick Searcy. You know, like when you talk about actors having to act as a bad actor, like singers pretending they can't sing for a role, or like this is what I feel like it is for Nick Searcy. He's walking a line as a character, but that's doubly hard as an actor, because he's got to walk the line as an actor acting as that character. So yeah, I think it's really good. It's really layered in what he's doing. Yeah. And when he does like finally lose his temper of Raylan in one of the episodes, you are like being scolded by your dad. It is really like upsetting to watch, because Raylan's really upset by it.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's the only person, there's only two people's opinions that matter. And it's Winona and it's Art. And you, and they, as soon as he walks in the door, he already has the respect for Art.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And that's, and again, like two lines, oh, at Glencoe, blah, 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 doesn't matter. But those two, like you talked about, they walk in and you feel it.
Mm.
The chemistry is great. Yeah. Casting director for the win. It's amazing.
Yeah, you feel that they were working together for years. And I think, I don't think they ever really cover it in the show, do they? But the backstory is it was a previous time that Raylan got himself in trouble. So he was assigned there. And I don't know if they have ever mentioned that in the show, do they? But I've learned that from reading.
Yeah, they don't mention it in the show, but it's just like he was there as a gun trainer, and they don't say how he ended up there.
Yeah,
but yeah,
I guess you're supposed to assume
punishment. Yeah.
Yeah. Raylan wouldn't choose to be there. So let's assume that. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. It was definitely a punishment there. And that, and Art, you feel like Art was making a choice as whether he wanted to retire or not, and then decided he did not want that. And so he's back in the field.
So I'll go to a nice quiet little Kentucky office, and then Raylan walks in your door.
Yeah. Right. And I think too, what's really good with the people with Tim and Rachel is that the two of them are also, they've been partners for a while. They've been there together for a while. And that is there, the way that they're comfortable in the room together, the way that they sit in a car together, the way that they're in on jokes together, all of it is really good. And
there's a really nice comment, isn't there, when Raylan and Rachel are on the case together, and he's like, I know, like I've walked in and I've taken over, and now I'm the number one guy. And she's like, well, who says you're the number one guy? Just because you're tall and good looking and white doesn't mean. It's a great conversation. It's really good fun.
It is perfect. And it's so good. And she's great because, again, she's a really good actor and has a really good presence. She's got her own charisma. And she is not a tall woman. We know. We've seen her in other things. So it's not like she's just short standing next to him. I mean, you know, she's just not a big person. But that, but to do this job, how does this woman, this sort of petite black woman end up as a U.S. Marshal in Lexington, Kentucky? She doesn't have an accent.
No, definitely. Yeah.
She is not from there. And Tim isn't either. Obviously. Tim is not sure where he is.
No. And yeah, Tim comes up in one of the episodes that I'll be talking about. And the moment he has in that episode, I think, is really telling for his character and his backstory. I know you've spoken about it before. I'm in complete agreement with what's going on with him. Yeah.
And it's only like, I think it's like season 5 or 6 that Art mentions it finally. Like, here's what's going on with Tim. Like, we know, we've been watching it, but we don't have to say. He and Art haven't had to sit down. Everybody looks at him and knows. You know, and it's funny that even in the episode with Dan, they're like, you're the shooter. I'm like, you think that. Tim's the shooter, but you think Raylan's the shooter, but he's not.
Yeah. It's another nice thing about Raylan, though, is that he, as soon as he gets to know people, he acknowledges their skills.
Yeah, yeah.
So he's like, no, you think I'm good, this guy. And he does it with Rachel as well, you know, like he immediately recognizes. Yeah, in the first episode, you have the funny moment when it's the, when Boyd's blown up the church.
The church, yeah.
And they're like, Rachel, you go and speak to him because you're black. And there's that little funny moment. But then it only takes a couple of moments like that for, I know it's art that sends her over, but you know, a couple of moments like that for Raylan to suddenly realize how good Rachel is at what she does.
Yeah.
And he really starts to respect her. And so I think he is the star of the show and he is the star of The Office. He is the classic, you know, cowboy that walks in with the hat on and everyone starts paying attention to him. But he respects and acknowledges everyone else's role, which I think is really important for him to be likable.
Yeah, because he doesn't have to be. He's the villain in another story.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah.
You know what I mean? He is. And, you know, we like these anti-heroes. It's something we like as people who read things. You know, like even rereading all the Spencer books. So it was like, oh, well, you know, he's a villain. Like, if you explained him, you're like, he's awful. He sounds pretty bad. You're like, yeah, well, he is. You know, Mal, Han Solo, who just is Han Solo. The people that you like, they're those that, like, they're complicated. Luke Skywalker is boring. And it's all, that's why I like Rian Johnson's Luke Skywalker. And I know people are all pissy. I'm like, he finally gets to be pissed off. You know, he's so boring for the first couple of movies. This is Luke Skywalker, where? You know, and then finally when he gets a little edge to him. So there's
I'm going to go get the power converter. Yeah. Station.
Exactly. And that's the thing. And nobody here is that. Everybody is flawed. Because there's even the line about Rachel. Art says, be nice. It's like, I'm always nice. And she says it like that as she storms over. She's not so good. Oh.
And what's interesting is, like, we spoke, didn't we, about Oliphant in Deadwood, about how, like, he's not the hero.
No.
Ostensibly, he looks like the hero. Again, he's still good-looking Timothy Oliphant.
Yeah.
And he gets to have the hot romance. But he's not the hero in Deadwood. He's a bad guy.
Yeah.
Here, he is the hero. He's very deliberately wearing a white hat, and I use that in my intro on purpose. Like, he is the white hat character of this show. But, of course, he has layers, and, you know, he's quite happy shooting people. Really has no qualms about doing that whatsoever.
No.
Or beating people up, or locking them in his trunk, or... But, it's important that he is seen as that white hat character, I think, here.
Yeah, 100%.
He needs those characteristics for this show to work.
Yes, you have to sympathize with the anti-hero. He's got it's the anti-hero who's got the heart of gold, right? I mean, the reason that, like in Firefly, all the cast is what it is, but it's, you know, it's Inara that gives him the heart of gold. It's not Kaylee. Mm-hmm. You want it, like, Kaylee is gold.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know, it's the way that he is in love with the prostitute. That's the heart. You know what I mean? It's like, you know, and so, like, the heart of gold is what the thing is. And so, like you said, his heart of gold is he sees Tim.
Mm.
Game. He sees Rachel, boss, hoot sheep, spoiler alert. You see, you know, he respects Art. He respects Winona. He respects Gary. You know, all these characters who come up, like, well,
Gary, what a douche.
Fucking Gary's such a douche. But you know what I mean? Like, but he gets it.
Yeah.
He understands what's happening. And so he tries to do Gary a solid, which leads to a problem. So
he does. Yeah.
Yeah.
Really interesting. Like, considering I'm going through the Firefly comics, which I never read.
Yeah.
I never put that together till you just said it. Yeah. Oh. Raylan and Winona are Mal and Inara. That's
100%.
Really interesting. Or probably the other way around. Mal and Inara are Raylan and Winona.
Yeah. I see it that way too. Mm. Winona's cheated and Winona's stepped out, you know, Inara's the prostitute, whatever. But you're also such an asshole.
Yeah.
You are also so problematic. Yeah, for sure. Pack totally gets it. Greg Pack, he really gets those two best. And I know that those go off the rails when he leaves. That's when I quit reading up when he leaves. And then they do timey-wimey stuff. And there's multiple timelines. And I know you're reading it, so I don't want to give too much away. But But they're just fun to hang out in the verse, isn't it?
That's what it is, isn't it? Yeah,
it's
absolutely.
What it is. You're like, it's even a bad verse is better than no verse.
As long as they get the character voices right, it's
Which
worth spending
they
time
do.
There.
They do.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's why City Primeval worked. And we're going to do that, right? We'll do City Primeval
Yeah,
at
I
the
think
end.
so.
Yeah, of course. Yeah. I mean, why would we not? Why would we hate ourselves?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah,
We
yeah.
wouldn't. Yeah. And then, and you know, that'll be the thing because it they there seems there will be City Primeval part two.
Let's hope so.
Yeah. Well, and they said Caitlin Dever, they had a draft of part one with Caitlin Dever in it. And they were like, we can't figure out how to get her in there. And she's like, just call me.
All right, great.
And so she's like, whatever, I'll be
There's
there
a
if you
setup
need
for a
me.
season by itself, isn't it? Really? Yeah.
What a star. I feel bad for her because she's in these. She's actually playing her own age and she's never really been allowed to play an adult. It's like they keep making, just because she's short doesn't mean she has to play a child forever. Yeah. Anyway, let's get into it. So favorite and best. So I will go with my favorite and then you go
Please,
with favorite
yeah.
And then you'll go with best and I'll go with best. So my favorite episode is oddly, and I went back for, I mean, it's tough. And this is an odd choice probably, but I forgot how good this one was and I forgot who the guest star was. So it is episode 9, Hatless. It is the one that the first appearance of Jerry Burns as Wynn Duffy.
Yes, yeah,
and
yeah.
I forgot Wynn was in season one because I'm used to Wynn with Mike in the trailer, you know, in the later seasons. He just keeps coming and going. The reason I think this is my favorite is because I am openly Team Winona. I don't care for Ava. I think Joelle Carter knows what she's doing. She's fine. Later seasons, the Ava goes to prison season, I just don't fucking care. There were so many times I just didn't care. The actor's great. She knows what she's doing. But I've always been Team Winona. Always, always, always. And I just feel like Hatless is such a great... What makes it my favorite is Jerry Burns. And there's a moment... The acting between Natalie Zee and Timothy Oliphant is so good. It's like you forget everybody else is on the screen sometimes when they're together. If they're putting on a clinic. And Jerry Burns just... the evolution of Wynn Duffy to see him here as this total psychopath.
Yeah.
And he's having all the fun. Talk about a character actor. He's in a current show that we're watching. It's called Death and Other Details. Cuckoo Birds. He plays the character that he plays in there. It's just like that guy is willing to show up and do anything. He is game for game. So I really just think Hatless is fun. You learn a lot about Raylan. He's on forced vacation because he's finally, Art finally can't take it anymore. And he gets the shit kicked out of him on purpose.
The last episode ends with Boyd being released, doesn't it? Because it's been revealed that
he's on
suspension, I suppose.
Yeah, so this is the low point of his life right now. So you see his border. There's a lot of borderline alcoholism in this series. You see it on full display. You see the misery. You see him love Winona. And again, Wynn Duffy. So that is my favorite episode. It's not the best, but it's definitely my favorite. It is a nice little, if you were watching it in real time and people were like, you should watch Justified. If you jumped in at season episode 9, I think you'd be okay. And again, because the performances are all so good. So that is my favorite. What say you to
Hatless? I think it makes total sense. I think, it's almost like a little mini movie before we hit and we say this a lot, don't we? Before we hit that arc. And sometimes these work and sometimes they don't. Fringe. As much as I love
you Fringe. Yeah, for real.
Sometimes Fringe, you did these episodes and they did not work. But here it really does. And I think we get to another side of Raylan where he makes good decisions, doesn't use a gun at all in this episode.
Crazy.
Doesn't shoot anyone.
Because he's off duty. That is a good shorthand. He's not working.
Yeah.
So it's very much like there's an issue of Dredd early on where Dredd is relieved of duty for one. And so he's just walking around. He's actually smiling. He's like letting people, he's like, whatever. Like people are like, oh shit, it's Dredd, but he won't do anything because he's not working. And then as soon as he gets his, then he's Dredd again. And so it's like that. He's not on duty. Yeah.
But he's never off duty either, of course.
He's never off duty, of course.
Yeah. I find that Ava Winona comment interesting. I'm not sure I'm always convinced by Zia and Oliphant together. I think they're good in this episode. I want to talk about them again soon.
Sure.
In another episode. I'm not always convinced by them. I guess I'm almost a little bit biased in my kind of like Clooney Lopez outside biasness to Molly Parker and Oliphant and Deadwood, because they have such chemistry and heat. And I actually think at the start of the season, when Ava and Winona are first together and they are like horny and hot for one another, they have loads of chemistry. Like,
sure.
So I don't know. Like, I do like, I think this is a good episode. Em really liked this episode, so she's joining me for this rewatch, which is rare, but there's a key factor in why she's watching this one with me. And it's
Timothy Oliphant's dreamy.
Tall, dark, handsome guy with the white hat. I'm not sure who pairs over him more, Emma or me, to be honest. There's a moment in the finale when he's in the car and he's just pulled up to the shack where Bo is keeping Ava. And he looks out of the car and there's something he does. And I said to Emma, I was like, my God, like, honestly, like inside my body, I just reacted to that. Like, that is the most handsome anybody's ever looked in their life. So her and I are fighting over Raylan, definitely.
Sure.
But she really liked this episode. I think if she was here sitting with us, she'd say this was her favorite episode. So I can totally understand why. Yeah.
Yeah. Nice. What is your favorite, sir?
This might be controversial. And I wonder if it is going to appear somewhere else for you.
Oh.
And speaking of Emma, she does not like this episode at all. But I really like episode 6, The Collection.
Okay. Oh, the art collection one.
The art collection one. Yeah. Because it's essentially a little mini noir.
Yeah. I like this one fine. This is not my least favorite. Yeah, no.
M hates it. She said this is her least favorite episode of the season. It's got a really clever twist at the end with the art collector.
I love the end.
Oh, it's amazing when he reveals that he's collecting all the Hitler paintings in order to burn them all. And amazing. He's got his own bad dad story to reveal. I really like it. I think the actress playing the like femme fatale who's manipulating the horse trainer to kill her husband and to kill off Buster from Arrested Development is I think she's
Tony
really
Hale.
Good.
It's funny. Yeah. I always think of him from Veep.
Right. I've never watched Veep, but I'm sure he's really good in that.
Gary. It's called Gary on Veep.
Okay, great. So I think, much as I have done with many of the things we've spoken about, this to me is, again, like a little mini movie. It's like a little noir snuck in the middle of a neo-Western show. And I just think it's really, really fun. I think you get some people popping back up again. The guy playing the horse trainers from Lost.
Yeah, Brett Cullen. Yep, yep.
Brett Cullen, thank
He's
you.
Really
yeah,
good. He's really He's, good. Yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah, Boyd's in this, of course. He's bookending. Raylan goes to see him, doesn't he, in the prison at both ends to ask about Arlo. And at the end, he's like, oh, I don't need to know about Arlo anymore. But Boyd's seen that there's a chink and I'm going to
manipulate the fuck out of it.
Yeah, Raylan's revealing his hand there. Absolutely. So it's just got lots of little moments that I really like in this episode. And I feel like perhaps this is the first time that we kind of move away from the case of the week. And it's kind of like, right, we're in now. We've had all these fun little cases, but we're sort of thinking about how we're going to work with Boyd, and we're thinking about how we're going to set up how the rest of the season's going to go. So for all those reasons, I really enjoy this episode.
No, I think it's a great choice. And the woman who plays the femme fatale, really good. Really, really good. She's got to manipulate everybody. She's got to do whatever. And she's really physical.
Yes.
You see her change when she's with Greg, the Cullen. You see her change when she's with her husband. You see her change when she's with Raylan. You see her change. Mm-hmm. She just, so I think that's a really good performance out of her, because the femme fatale is not one thing. And like, she recognizes it. Like the actor, Catherine Lanasa, she recognizes what she's doing. And I think that's a really good, whether it's direction, just her being really good. I could get why she's cast for this.
Yeah.
I do like it. I think Tony Hale is great. He's always good. Anytime he shows up, you know, he's going to be really good. And I loved the twist at the end. I thought it was a lot of fun. And, you know, Raylan, you see Raylan kind of take a beat in this one. Like, he doesn't always have to get the W. And that's what I liked about Hatless, is he literally gets the shit kicked out of him, but then he still gets his hat back at the end. But like in this one, he's smart, but he's not Sherlock Holmes.
Yeah.
he can be duped.
Yeah.
And he's biased. So like the whole thing with the art collector, he was unwilling to hear what the art collector was saying because he is just like, he's so fucking stubborn. He's not just so angry. Yeah, he's so stubborn. Yeah. And that gets in his way in this episode.
Yeah. I'd rather stick my dick in a blender.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. So excellent. I think that's a good choice. Yeah. No. So she just doesn't like it because
I just briefly asked her before we started recording. Yeah. I was like, oh, you know, where are you at? She's like, oh, yeah, I really like that episode. Oh, I didn't like that one. That was definitely my worst.
Fair.
So
fair.
She's pledged to listen back.
Okay. Hello. Hello.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm sure I'll hear when she does what she thinks of me picking this as my favorite.
Okay. That's fair. I mean, my least favorite is not this one. My least favorite does have a superstar cameo in it, but not, or guest star. And again, I was surprised because I remembered that one when, you know, from the first watch through. And then, and then I was like, oh. Anyway, so that's, those are favorites. Okay. So best.
I think the pilot is really strong. I think the final episode, arguably for most people, would be the best, but it's not for me. I think this episode before that, episode 12, Fathers and Sons, is the best episode of this season.
Okay. It's a tough one. It's tough.
It is tough. And if you are about to argue either 1 or 13, or well, we'll find out. Whatever you choose to argue, I'm sure, you know, I would agree with most of your, if not all your points. I think this episode is perfectly paced. It's doing a lot. It's doing a lot of heavy lifting in order for us to get the action-packed finale. Oof. You're getting Bo going to Florida to meet up with his contacts. You're getting the really amazing scene of Arlo in the VA, I think it's called, with the veteran who's thinking about blowing himself up because he's not allowed to be called back up for his unit. That is such a powerful scene. It has so much to say about the military and veterans.
Because you think it's going to be something else. You think he wants to blow the place up because he has to go.
Yes.
And he's mad that he doesn't get to go. What a turn. Again, another great turn. Good.
Brilliant.
Like this guy, this just shows up for one episode and just kills it.
Yeah, he does. And the way that Arlo talks him down, and then the way that Raylan finds a little glimmer of respect for him afterwards, he's like, none of that was true, was it? And Arlo's like, no, but it worked, didn't it? It's just a really nice moment between those two. Brilliant acting, and I think, again, development for both their characters. And, of course, we get Tim.
We get Tim.
Raylan and Art aren't allowed in because they're not veterans, so they call up Tim. And I love when Tim turns up, and he's like pretty pissed, let's be honest. Have you been drinking?
Pissed in both ways.
Yeah, yeah. And he's like, yeah, well, I'm off duty, so I was getting there.
Yeah.
And Art's like, you shouldn't have, Art doesn't say it, but the intimation is like, you shouldn't have driven. This is not okay. But you're right, he's pissed off at having to go there because he wants no association with his past in this way at all.
At all.
And when he gets in, and the way he talks to all the other veterans in there, they want to respect him, and he's just trying to push it away. And that, again, it's such good storytelling. It's character development. It's, this guy is fucked from his time in the military. He has full-on PTSD. But they don't have to tell you. Nobody sits down and goes, oh, it's a shame we had to call Tim in because of his PTSD. He wouldn't like to be here. We just learn it through what we're seeing. I think it's brilliant. And then, of course, we get the finale with Boyd, the bazooka, and just one more for good measure.
Fire in the hole!
Absolutely, yeah. Blowing up the tanker, and it's like, oh, shit. There's that final chess piece being moved to set up the finale. So, yeah, I went back and forward, but this is where I landed. I think this episode does absolutely everything right.
It does. It's missing no Rachel.
That's true.
Fair, but it's fair. I mean, everything that you're saying, I hear it. It's I could not agree with anything. I mean, I think that Jacob Pitts, it's in this episode when and you just kind of think it. And again, you just, in retrospect, you're like, huh? Because, you know, this, Graham Yost, he lives in the world. He's commenting on other things.
Mm-hmm.
And Tim is what Martin Riggs is supposed to be.
Sure. Yeah. 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 That's
but
good.
He's not, but, and so like, because Raylan, like if Martin Riggs, you know, like had a baby with himself, he'd be, you know what I mean? Or like if I guess if Tim and Raylan had a baby, it'd be Martin Riggs, right? Mm-hmm. Like it's like this cool guy who's a badass, who's everything, but who's also like totally fucked up from being a shooter in the war. And so I love Tim's character because I think Tim, this is the commentary on like, this is what happens to young men. This is what we mm-hmm. do. Tim's mm-hmm. a young man, right? Mm-hmm. He is, this is what, and you see the juxtaposition too, because you see like Tim doesn't want anything to do with it. This guy wants to go back. He feels less than because of that, but Tim's not from here and this kid is from here. So there's mm-hmm. also this commentary on Eastern Kentucky a little bit. So no, I think it's all doing great work. Again, Jacob Pitts shows up. He owns it. Playing drunk can't be easy.
No.
I heard a thing that Nick Cage did the blackout drunk thing in Leaving Las Vegas. Like when he did that.
Mm-hmm.
That was him. That was him being black. He got blackout drunk on set and the director didn't know it was real until it was done. And then afterwards he got in a lot of trouble because he could have lost the insurance writer for the film. And then he said, well, that's the only time I got that drunk in the movie, but I needed to know what it was like. So I thought I would just do it and not tell anybody. You're like, you crazy bastard. So I don't know that Jacob Pitt showed up drunk for this scene, but boy, he really leaned into it. He did. Maybe he just took a shot just before, but it was excellent. Yeah. No, I couldn't disagree with anything that you said. And you called it out. What I think the best episode is the pilot.
Okay.
If they didn't get picked up, you have an excellent TV movie.
Hell yeah.
Right. Wow. I never have said that before, that I think the best episode of anything is the first episode. But it comes in hot. And you said it from the beginning. It's hit firing on all cylinders. These actors know what they're doing. Everybody's on point. Everybody knows. Now, you don't get Bull yet, which is too bad because you don't get Arlo yet. So it's tough. I was like, they're both so good. The actors are so good and they bring so much. And Helen, you don't get those other characters yet. But if you're just saying like, you're just going to watch a little TV movie. Like when I was a kid, those were things. They just made standalone TV movies. And you would just do like Tom Selleck did those with the Jesse Stones. He didn't turn Jesse Stone, the Robert Parker Jesse Stones, into, and I've actually not watched them. I should. But he turned them into little TV movies. He didn't make a Jesse Stone series. He was like, I'll just make a TV movie and then show up. And so if they wanted to do, and that was actually what I thought they would do with Justified, is they didn't think we'd get City Primeval. I thought we'd get an occasional movie. Like every 5 years, they get the band back together to make a 2-hour movie, give us all joy, and off they go. Instead, we're getting a little 6-episode.
Yeah.
You know, unfortunately, Michigan didn't let them shoot in Michigan, so that was all in Chicago, which is so stupid. So the reason I like number one, I think number one is the best, is because you've already said it all. Everybody knows the assignment. You walk into a lived-in world. The opening, Tommy Bucks, that is ripped from the pages. He walked right out of Fire in the Hole. When you read the short story, this is such a love letter to Elmore Leonard, and it's just so hard. And my feeling on Tarantino. I know I don't want to get canceled on my own show, but like, he's not my favorite. And I know you love that. And the one thing that he does best, what Tarantino does best, is capture Elmore Leonard's dialogue.
Mm-hmm.
And he obviously, that's his whole shtick, right? That's his whole thing, is like, I'm just going to, he loves Elmore Leonard and samurai movies. And so he just, that's his whole life. And it's clear, Tarantino will admit, like he
learned how to write
dialogue by reading Elmore Leonard books.
Mm-hmm.
So did the Coen brothers, obviously, right? I mean, there's a certain group of people you see them and you're like, oh, you read Elmore Leonard books and it taught you how to write dialogue. And so this just, it just captures it so perfectly. It's just such a lovely little, if nothing else existed, this is the greatest pilot ever.
Yeah, I think that's a fair shout. I mean, we're obviously very glad lots more existed.
Yeah.
But yeah, as a little capsule of what Justified is, yeah, it's interesting. I always thought, and until I started reading Pronto, I always thought he was Tommy Bugs.
Oh.
It's something in the way they say it. Yeah.
Tommy Bugs.
But no, it's obviously Tommy Bucks. But yeah, that opening is brilliant. And I love the juxtaposition between the lighting and the opening in Florida. Even this little note they've thought about, and then when he goes to Kentucky, I think that's really handled really well. I like that we get his martial boss in Florida. He comes back later in some later seasons. They get the same actor, which is great. Yeah, I think it's really, really good. And like I say, the only thing I don't like about, not necessarily this episode, but it starts here and it bleeds into some of the case of the week ones, is the Raylan as like the hottest guy on earth. Like every, I mean, yes, I know. But I mean, it's like every woman he walks past does that kind of like that meme thing you see on the internet of, you know, like,
sure. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Every woman is like, oh my God, Raylan, like I'll do anything for you. And it sort of continues a bit too far through the season. I get it with Ava. She had a crush on him when they were at school. But the way this plays out to the finale, which I know, as you said, is ripped straight from the pages, is so good and so clever. And they're kind of, although we don't get to see Ava and Beaumont in the house, the repetition of that scene being set is really cool, is really clever.
It's like you feel like you see it. It's almost as though, like, you think you see the head in the box in Seven. It's that good.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You think you see it, but you never see it. It's so good. Yeah, yeah, and that scene, and it's just such a good, the setting is great. Casting is perfect. The light, I mean, it's just, I just think, as far as pilots go, I just don't know that I've seen a better pilot.
Yeah.
And again, it's because they knew what they were doing. They didn't like, let's do a show based on Raylan and then we'll do Fire in the Hole later. They're like, no, let's just shoot Fire in the Hole and see what happens. And they're like, oh, so it's, that's what makes it work. It's because it had excellent starting material, right? Like I've been rewatching the Highlander show and that pilot has got Connor McLeod in it and they're resetting the universe. And it's like, cause the first two movies were out by the time the show came out and they're just like, and they could have leaned into the second movie where they kind of reset the thing and the game is over, what the game wasn't over, blah, 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 time travel, Michael Ironside, whatever. But instead, I mean, that second movie is just a sack of dog shit. But the show is really good. But the pilot of the show, it's like not very good. It's a show pilot. You know what I mean? It's like even with Lambert in there and Adrian Paul, who is, again, another, it's one of those things where every time it's ever, Duncan MacLeod is the hottest man in the world. And you're like, well, look at, you're casting a bunch. You're casting Roger Daltrey. You know what I mean? Like, okay, yeah, of course. You're like, is that the guy from The Who? Who's that handsome guy next to him, right? I mean, it's like you're not. So all of that to say, it is true. What you're saying is true. But I, that does get a little, but it's hard. Like you said, by episode 13, you're like, whoa.
Yeah, yeah, I'm swooning. yeah, absolutely. I think, well, what this does as well, you know, we said about that subtle storytelling. This does it already in episode one.
Yeah.
When Raylan shoots Boyd. You know he missed. You know as a viewer he missed. Now this does do, the art does verbalize it afterwards, unfortunately. But yeah. I think it's a pilot, we kind of excuse it. But we know. We don't need, so it's kind of a shame. I wish they could just take that one line out.
Yeah.
That Raylan could have shot wherever he wanted it, but he
could have shot him wherever he wanted. That's right. Yeah, yeah, I agree. And that is, that's too bad. But, and again, that's why then when you think, holy shit, if Tim's a better shot than him,
yeah,
what the fuck? Yeah, but Tim's a sniper.
Yeah,
from Raylan long range. Shoots with a handgun. Yeah, yeah. So that's my favorite and best.
Yeah, makes
and
sense.
Your favorite and best, and then my least favorite involves everybody's. We talked about one of his co-stars before we started recording. From Succession is the fourth episode, Long in the Tooth, starring everybody's favorite John Hughes character, Cameron Frye. Yeah. So it takes place. So he's, Alan Ruck plays a Roland Pike. He's a dentist and he's on the run from the mob. And the ending, you know, is fine. And the mob's on one side of the border and whatever. It went on too long and you took him out of Kentucky already, like episode four, and you're going on this road. The performances were all fine. It's not bad TV. It's just my least favorite. I could skipping Long in the Tooth wouldn't mess up if it were 12. And again, it's not bad. I wouldn't deliberately skip it. But if you removed it from these, you'd have a 12 episode season and you wouldn't even know it was missing. So to me,
no,
that's what makes
it
like wah wah.
Yeah. I guess the only thing is it's the kind of the end of the Tommy Buck's arc. So I'm guessing this is where the Harry Arno arc in the books goes, because Roland Pike here is the kind of Harry Arno substitute, isn't he?
Well,
he's mixed between
him and the guy from episode
and
three.
Pinter. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Pinter. Yeah. Yeah.
But But the reason Raylan shoots Tommy Bucks is because of... No, it's not, is it? There's somebody
not
else.
Not in this. Yeah, not in this version.
In this, he got somebody down in Venezuela or something, isn't it? In Just by the TV series.
Yeah.
Raylan hates Tommy Bucks, not Bugs.
Yeah.
Because of a time when he like captured Raylan down in Venezuela and he was going after a fugitive and they killed that fugitive. Is that right?
Yeah. He killed somebody right in front of him. Right. Yeah. Yeah.
So I'm sure it's brought up here though. There's some reason why it's brought up here with Pike. I can't remember why.
Pike's the accountant.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
He cooked the books. And so he was in on it. And Raylan doesn't want to kill him. Raylan just wants to bring him in. Raylan knows that Raylan's after him. He's still being a white knight in here because he's trying to save him from being killed because he turned on Bucks. He skimmed from him.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it just...
Now, and yeah.
Yeah. And Pike, it's like, yeah.
Yeah. The thing I'm conflating together is that Pike is the character that walked away from Raylan, isn't it? Like Arno does in Quanto.
Yeah.
So Raylan trusts him that when he says, like, I'm going to just go off to the toilet, I'm just going to pop off somewhere and I'll come back in a minute.
Yeah. So in Pronto, you learn that Harry Arno slips Raylan twice.
Yeah.
And Roz and Pike is the guy who has slipped Raylan more than once. So it's just like he needs to prove that he doesn't suck. And so that's, and then that he goes to Italy. In this, he goes to, you know, the Mexico border. It just, it just doesn't work. It's not earned. You spend half your time with Harry.
Yeah.
And you do spend a lot of time. You get Alan Ruck, you're going to use him. It's not like he's bad. I'm not saying he's doing a bad performance or whatever. And actually, you know, you kind of get a sense of like, they do really good shorthand. He's a dentist. He's getting paid in tamales. His nurse thinks he's dreamy. There's like all these things. I get it. They're doing a good thing. I just didn't care. It just is my least favorite. Yeah.
I think it's fair. And he's the only real like kind of guest star, isn't he, as well? It's any time it really does it. Everyone else, as you said, is like character actors or his mates from Deadwood or from Lost, or it's the only person who's like, oh, it's Alan Ruck.
Right. A very special episode. It is weird. Yeah. He's not like, what do I know him from? He's like, oh, it's Cameron.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's like he's so that guy. Then that's what people, and I've not watched the session, but I know that's what people love about it, is that he disappears into that role. Like even in his one scene in Speech, you're like, don't shoot. Cameron's on the bus. Yeah, right? Like for years, he couldn't get away from it because he aged pretty well. And now that he's older and he's gray and he's got the beard and everything, that helps. But yeah, I think that's it. I think it's exactly right. It's like when we did Buffy and John Ritter showed up and you were like, that's like a stunt cast, but it also it's like John Ritter just wanted to be on Buffy, and maybe Alan Ruck was like, I want, you know, this is episode 4 though. So how far along could it have been? Like I said, maybe he just knew Graham. I don't know how he got cast for this. I think you're right. And maybe if it's a different actor, it works better, but probably not. It's still, again, fine. I'm not saying it's bad. It's my least favorite for all those.
No, I think I understand why. I think you're absolutely right. You don't skip it, but if you accidentally missed a week and you wouldn't have noticed.
You wouldn't. That's perfectly said. Yeah.
No.
What about
which is
you,
how then? I feel about my least favorite as well, which is the episode before, episode 3, Fixer.
The Fixer. Yeah.
Yeah. I like the Pinter character. I think he's interesting. I think he's well performed. I like the backstory of like, now you're the new guy in the office. You are getting this dude because he's so annoying and nobody wants to deal with him. I like all that stuff. I just really don't like the subplot of Travers and I can't remember the name of the other guy. We've got like the kind of the surf dude guy, and we've got the black collector guy, and I think they're both really bad actors. I think they're really caricature in their performance. I don't think they don't feel like characters. We've said all the way through this, like, everyone's got depth. Everyone feels like a real person. I loved your phrasing of like, it's a lived in world. These two don't. They just feel like, here's two stereotypes that stick him in an episode. What can we do with it? I feel like there's really bad like filmmaking in this episode as well. There's like continuity errors at times and it feels rushed, and that maybe makes sense. Like episode 3, perhaps they make the pilot and it's gone well and they've been produced. So then you put a lot of effort into episode 2 and then maybe they're a little bit behind. I don't know. Just something about this doesn't work for me. And this is one of the episodes when they do really lean into the like, woohoo, Timothy Oliphant, Raylan is the best looking guy in the whole world. And every woman just cannot. So yeah, it's just, I think it's not actively bad, but I think there are people in it that are actively bad.
Sure, I hear that. And I think when you read, because I don't think Riding the Rap is as good as Pronto, and it's not as good as, and this is Pronto.
Okay.
Or yeah, I'm sorry, this is Riding the Rap. This is
this
the
is
plot
this
of
episode.
Riding. Right. And I think that's part of the problem is that was a full book. Like Fire in the Hole is a 30-page story that you would like, we can just put it down there. This, they had to cut some things. There is a subplot, and I won't, because I know you're going to read it. There's a subplot that they cut. I gave Pronto a 4. I give Riding Rap a 3, mm-hmm. right? Fire in the Hole is a 5. Like, as a collection, it isn't. As a collection, it's like most short story collections, it's a 3 because there's some that are better than others. But like the story, Fire in the Hole, is a 5 out of 5. It's a 10 out of 5. It is an exceptional piece of writing. Riding the Rap is fine. There are some problems with it. When you read it, we'll discuss. But, and I think that leans into what you're saying. I totally get why it's your least favorite. It's probably my least favorite of the Raylan stuff as a book. I couldn't agree more. And I said Bobby because the character that Curtis is his name in this, he's called Bobby in the book.
Okay.
But yeah, so because I just read that. So I was like,
Of like Rum Punch, you know, this could be Ordell and could be.
Right. It is exactly.
Now I can't think of
it.
It's just like here's two characters which are kind of Leonard-ish. Let's stick them in an episode. So I can't think what Robert De Niro's character is called in Rum Punch. I feel the same as you do about 4. I would happily skip over this episode, and again, you're not missing anything. It's not adding anything to the story. We're still in that kind of story of the week, case of the week point.
Yeah. Pinter comes back in a further episode.
Yeah, that's true.
But again, one line doesn't matter. Go see the guy and that's it. You know, it's like in this one, the only thing is like, because he's, you know, he gets duped by the server in this one. And then now he's in love with the server again in the next episode. Cause you're like, dumbass. It's all true. I agree. It's like they weren't deciding if they wanted it to be a procedural, and then they were like, we don't want it to be a procedural. And that's it. You don't come in hot with Fire in the Hole and then do like 3 episodes of a procedural. Like, you come in hot with Fire in the Hole and like, we're going to make 12 episodes. This is the show.
Yeah.
This, everything, because episodes 2, 3, and 4, and then when Bo comes, and then when Arlo comes, and Helen comes, now you've got this story that you're with for the next 70 episodes. But it's like, because there's plenty of, there's already enough police procedurals. We don't need another one. And I'm not, and that's the thing. Some are really good. Some are better than others. Like all of the, you know, Law and Order, there was a Law and Order, what was it even called? There was the one that Vincent D'Onofrio was the star of, Criminal Intent. And that one was like, he was Sherlock Holmes and Michelle Eames played the Watson of that. And like, it was great. It was Law and Order in the Law and Order universe, but it wasn't. He was amazing. D'Onofrio was exceptional. He like smelled things and was weird and just played himself, you know, and Eames was great. And it was like the most Sherlock Holmes of them. And I love that show. And then, you know, he left and whatever. And it was the least popular of the Law and Order universe because you had to pay attention. There was he had his own Moriarty. They had a recurring character, a villain who kept coming back, which isn't something that you do. It's like, you could right now on some network in America, Law and Order is playing, or CSI is playing, or NCIS is playing, and it doesn't matter. Episodes 2, 3, and 4 of this were that. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
You know, and then, like you said, 6 was kind of the end of that, but it's also the beginning of something. So you got to watch 6. You know, I'm with you. So those are our least favorites. And again, not bad. Yeah. Just find TV. Yeah. Just fine. So the modern lens stuff, I feel we have to talk about a couple of things here. There's some ladies and there's some homophobia. So where would you like to, those are the two things because I agree. I think the race stuff is handled very well as two white guys. Of course, we're qualified to talk about the race discussion with Rachel. I personally feel like it's handled really well.
Mm-hmm. I do too. Yeah. It doesn't, other than one scene and then it's called out, it doesn't factor into anything. It's
they
just
call
she's
it
good
out.
At her job.
They address it and they're like, yeah. People are watching the show and they're thinking it. Why don't we just write it in and then we'll move the fuck on? And then it's never, ever brought up again.
No.
She does say the thing like, if I walked in wearing the hat, how would people treat me? And that had nothing to do with race. It had to do with, and she says, it's because you're a tall, good looking white dude.
Mm-hmm.
And she, you know, but again, that's not like Raylan's not bringing up the race thing.
No,
it's like it's about for him. It's like time in the barrel. He doesn't want to usurp her rank.
Mm-hmm.
It's a respect thing. So
yeah.
Anyway, so there's lots of gay jokes, and there's obviously
there's
violence against women. Yeah.
And I don't mean fuck because we all say fuck.
Fuck. Yeah.
No, that's fine. So, but I mean, I guess, you know, that's, I'm not excusing it. That's that kind of datedness of it, I think. There's a really poorly handled rape joke in episode 2 as well, which just made me feel icky.
Yeah.
I think at times I feel a bit sorry for Natalie. Is it Natalie's ear?
Natalie Z.
I don't know.
Yeah.
I think at times...
Lee spells her name L-E-A.
Yeah, good point.
So that's maybe how I do it. Yeah. But it could be, you know, like it could be pronounced. I don't know. Natalie Z. Winona, that's who we know her as.
When she listens, maybe she'll get in touch with us.
Yeah, I'm sure she will. But when we see her in things.
Yeah, she's always Winona.
Winona. Or sometimes Lee will see her and even be like, hey, Raylan.
Hey, that's... I mean, fair.
Yeah, right.
Boba Fett. Oh, Raylan's in it. Yes.
Yeah, exactly. but she'll say that when she sees Natalie Z. She'll see her and still just say Raylan out loud about her because that's what she knows her as. Yeah. As that woman from Raylan.
Yeah, fair enough. I get, much like we said with times with Boyd, but obviously to a much lesser extent for Boyd, I think they're not quite sure what to do with an owner. And I think at times they stick her in an episode because they want her in it. And because they want to have these two really ridiculously beautiful people next to one another. But I again, I haven't got too many notes, really. There's nothing that really stood out other than like a couple of little misjudged moments. Other than that, I think it's dated pretty well.
I do too. I was surprised. And the thing is, the gay jokes are in the books. And it's very much like the gay jokes in my all-time favorite movie, Heathers. The people who say the gay jokes are the awful people. And the people who do this, who treat women poorly are the awful people. Now, is there a power dynamic between Raylan and Ava? You could read it that way because of the way it's set up from the beginning with her saying, I loved you since I was 12 years old. And he was like, well, I left. She's like, you know, because you were too young. So, you know, she was throwing herself at him. And he was like, because he's not. So, you know, he's a couple years older than her. We know that he leaves when he's 19. So she's 16. So she's 12. He's 15. So he's like, you're 12. Mm-hmm. And he could never not see her as 12. But now they're adults. And he sees her. And she is Joelle Carter as a lovely woman.
Yeah.
And there's no doubt about that. And, except for the hair, because Ava's got black hair.
Oh, okay.
It's like they ripped her out of the page. It's like they were just like, dump her right on there. There she is. I mean, it's like really so perfectly cast. Honestly, all of them across the board. But she's great. So there is that moment early on where you're like, well, is this an abuse of power? Because he's coming in as the white knight. He's there to protect her. Everything that happens in the pilot, they don't get frisky until episodes 3 and 4 or whatever. So then you're like, oh, okay. And then obviously we know it's, as Art says, you couldn't just keep your dick in your pants, right? Yeah. You just couldn't do it. So there's that, like, but again, it's not an unwilling relationship.
No.
They are consenting adults. If anything, she's taking advantage of him. You know, because she knows what he knows. He sees her look at her. She sees how he's looking. Yeah. You know, it's like if she walked away, he wouldn't chase her. She knows that. She knows he's not going to chase her. But if she's going to make herself show up drunk at his house, you know, and she's not drunk at his house. They get drunk together. I don't mean it that way. He doesn't take advantage of her while she's drunk. So you could read it that way. But I think he keeps pushing her away enough that there isn't an abuse of power there. Mm. But that's, I was just, but I don't like, there's a lot of damsel in distressing.
For Ava?
Yeah.
Yeah, but again, it's called out, isn't it? He says, you do get yourself kidnapped a lot
that
in one
true.
Episode.
That is
he's
true.
Like, I think it's in the
right.
last episode. He's
You're
like,
right.
Or does. In episode 12, he's like, please leave. I've asked you so many times, please leave, because you do get yourself kidnapped.
Yeah, that's
lot.
Right.
Like,
yeah.
I do like it. And I think they're always aware of these moments, aren't they? Because I like it when Winona calls Roland out and she's like, you've messed this one up, haven't you?
Yeah.
When
oh,
Ava's
my God.
drunk in the back and she's handcuffed, and Winona's like, you've done it again. And Redden's like, yeah, of course it's me. What did you expect? So I think they're aware of these kind of dangerous areas they're playing with the conventions in. And so they're quite happy to call them out. You talking about the I love that bit with Art when he's really annoyed about Raylan having sex with Ava. I think it's in episode 6. I think it's when Raylan says to the art collector, when he says, will you come and see my Hitlers? And Raylan's like, I'd rather stick my dick in a blender.
Yeah.
And it's really subtle, and Art's sitting next to him in the car and he's like, well, that would solve a lot of problems, wouldn't it?
Yeah, it would solve a lot of problems. So
it's
good.
Brilliant. Yeah, Raylan's little side eye at him. So no, I hear what you're saying, and I can see if there was maybe one or two moments that were handled differently, it would be really uncomfortable, that Ava Raylan relationship. I think she's cut such a tragic figure in this season, and knowing where her arc goes. And I hear you about the season, the Ava in prison season, but where her character goes from where she starts here of taking agency. I'm not condoning anyone shooting their even abusive spouse. I mean, he deserved it, don't get me wrong, but I'm not promoting that idea. But I mean, we're on her side, of course.
We are totally on her side.
Yeah. She has agency and power, and where she ends up going, I think it's such a tragic arc for her. And it starts right here in season one with this one simple relationship going wrong with Raylan, this one kind of rejection from Raylan. He would never want it to happen. He'd never see where it would go. But I think you need them to have this relationship.
You do. Oh yeah, you need for everything else to happen.
Mm.
That has to happen, because Boyd doesn't get out of jail, blah 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 blah. Again, Raylan making mistakes. Raylan makes mistakes. Again, he is handsome and dreamy, and I get what you're saying. Like, I didn't think about that does get to be where everybody's like, Aruga.
Yeah.
You're
He's
right.
Doing it on purpose, right?
Yeah.
I always get the feeling in the start of season one, he is doing things to get himself in trouble because he's hoping Art will reassign
send
him.
Send him away.
Yeah, he's doing it on purpose, isn't he? So, like, he is pushing Ava away, and I think his conscience says, I should.
Yeah.
But then part of him says, like, oh, but I get to have sex with a really beautiful woman.
Yeah.
And I might get in trouble and get reassigned. So, best of both worlds.
Yeah, right, because he's thinking either, and she may come with him, and then that gets her out of the situation. Because I think if he got relocated, but she seems dead set, and there is that, and this is part of that, what I asked her off the top, like, is Yost making fun of Eastern Kentucky? And he's acknowledging the problem with Eastern Kentucky. And this show is, when we get to seasons 2, 3, 4, with the meth problem, and obviously meth is happening here, it is a problem. And and in the Rust Belt and in the former Coal Belt, it is bad. Things are bad. There's a lot of people whose whole lives were hooked on building things or digging holes, or, you know, and it's like, well, you know, you live on an island where there's an entire, one of the entire countries on your island, which somehow has four countries. The people of Wales is like Eastern Kentucky, right? Like the folks there are treated poorly because they do the manual labor that gets the energy for the rest of you to live. Why are you such assholes to them? Like, why do you make fun of them? This is the job they have. And so, you know, there's something to that idea of, you know, like the noble work and the loving where you come from. And like when I watch the Six Nations rugby, the Welsh are out of their minds. Like, I love, like, I have no team to root for there, right? I mean, I'm like half Italian, I'm half Irish. They're both part of the Six Nations. I honestly root for Wales. I like love them. Like, I love everything. Like, I've never been, obviously, but like just the way that it's like, this is what we have. And they're so passionate. And it's like, they're so proud to be Welsh. And they're like, they understand that the rest of the country and the rest of Europe and even Ireland is making fun of you. And you're just like, God damn it. And so I feel like this Easter, this part of Kentucky is like that. Mm-hmm. And there's like that passion, and Ava has that passion. She's mm-hmm. like, she doesn't want to leave there. She doesn't want to go. Cause it's like, dude, you could go anywhere you want. You cut hair. So that's a skill.
Yeah.
You can take any, guess what people have everywhere? Hair. And there's a hair salon that's hiring everywhere right now. Wherever you go in the world, there's a hair salon that's hiring. Go. That's a job. That's a good job. You make a lot of money. Women pay a lot to get their hair colored.
Yeah.
Because if you do it wrong, that's the problem. So that's why they pay a lot to do it right. So if you know how what you're doing, like Seth Singleton, you know, Seth from the, his wife, she does hair, but she just colors hair. She doesn't even have to cut it. She does so big, she does so well because she's so good at it that people are like lined up for months to come to her, right? Because it's such a skill. So go. But, you know, so there's something about her that is like, it's like she's not, like, you could read it as she's being stupid, but you could also be it as like she's living a Beach Boy song and she's being true to her school kind of thing, you know? So, and it's her house. So you fucking take my house from me, take my life from me just because you're some asshole fucking Dixie Mafia criminal bullshit. And I don't know, there's something, I like her as a character. Like you said, we're on her side, but I also, we get too much about Ava later. I forgot how much I like Ava in season one.
Yeah. Because of where her character ends up being taken. Yeah. How prominent she becomes. Yeah.
But obviously, she's going to show up if they continue on. Because as soon as the season Primeval ended, Lee was like, oh shit, he's going to end up in Arizona. I was like, oh shit. And she doesn't like Ava either, but she's worried about you know, about Ava. I mean, you worry about her. Even when you dislike how much time they're spending with her, Joelle Carter is amazing. And she is giving her such humanity. I believe you said agency earlier, too. Yeah, she really does. So again, nobody can speak about feminism and racism better than two straight white guys.
No, of course not. That's what everyone is here for, right?
Oh, yeah, I agree. So anyway, that was my little, sorry, I didn't mean to rant like that. I couldn't stop myself. It is funny. I think it'll be interesting to see as we go, because again, I was always Team Winona. Even here though, I like Ava as a character. But it's really great that you pointed out that this had to happen. This is the whole catalyst and one bad decision. But I agree, he does it on purpose.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah.
And if she wouldn't come with him, he'd still be happily be relocated to Connecticut.
Yeah, I think, you know, if Ava wanted to come, fine. If she didn't, fine. That's just kind of how Raylan lives his life at the moment, isn't it? Because he's not over Winona. So,
no. And what do you make of
the only thing that helped him get away from, well, the only thing that helped him deal with that was being away from Winona. So now he's back in her orbit. He's, you know, things are very difficult for him.
They are very difficult for him. And you see how he looks. He's such a good actor, but you see how he looks at her.
Yeah.
It's like really good. Like he's like across, even like when it's like the bat signal's on, like when they're in the courthouse together and she's across the room, he feels
with her back to him.
Yeah.
She's the, don't know what you call it. What's the
stenographer.
The notary, the stenographer. Okay. Right. Yeah.
So it's amazing. And she's really, I think it's just well performed and she's really good. And so what do you make of the, as we come to the end here, what do you make of the fact that in the book they have boys and she stays behind in Glencoe? She's in Georgia, not in Kentucky. And, you know, this is, again, I get you have to make some changes, but the fact that they choose to not have them have kids where she is irrelevant. But the fact that they choose to have them not have kids in the show, what do you think of that decision? Good decision?
I think so, because I think the way they set Raylan up in the show, it's a black mark against him, isn't it? Why is he not involved in his son's life? And why is he, so for him to have broken up with Winona and that to be in a bad breakup and him still to be processing and dealing with that, we accept, because, you know, we've all been there. We understand that. I think if he's got his own issues, which are all spawned from his relationship with his dad. And that's the one of the key driving forces of this whole series. So I think they had to write that out because he can't be putting that upon his own two boys. It wouldn't have worked. He either needs to be a totally invested dad, which we get to see some of in City Primeval.
With his own daughter.
I know you've got opinions and thoughts when we get
And
when we see that, I mean, she's much more grown up, but I feel that when she was younger, he was there.
I agree. There's a line though, when she's, because like he moves to Miami thinking they're going to move to Miami, and then she stays behind in both the book and the show.
Right. Yeah.
It's a choice. Yeah. Like she's like, oh, you're gone. And he's like, you were supposed to come. It was a job. You stayed behind to sell the house and you ended up with Gary in both situations, which I find really, really quite funny. I think it's really good. And obviously the Arlo stuff and then the difference between the book, Arlo's dead in the book and his mom is alive. And in this, it's the other way around. And I think that was a smart move. The guy who plays Arlo is exceptional. Seasons, there's the thing that Arlo does later. And there's a line in here when he says, listen, son, and he's like, don't you say that. Like of all the curses Arlo could do is when he calls him son.
Mm.
And he's like, even when he brings up his mother, who Raylan obviously thinks was a saint, and he loves his Aunt Helen, who's also married Arlo. So there's something magical about Arlo. That guy is great, though. What a great character. It's like Steven Spielberg made a TV show, and it was called Justified.
Oh, 100%.
That's how fathers and sonny it is, right? And Bo and dealing with the Bowman character. Yeah. Who's never there, but he is over us all. And the fact that Raylan, not just he doesn't want to be like Arlo, but he also becomes a cop. So it's like there's this whole conversation of being like your dad. And I feel like as the show goes on, we'll continue to talk about that. And I didn't want to give it. We don't want to spill it all in episode one and be sobbing uncontrollably while we drink our whiskey.
No, it's definitely there because there's that wonderful moment between Bo and Arlo where they talk about Boyd and Raylan. It's like, well, your son's always getting my son into trouble. It's essentially the conversation, like their dads, like their kids at school. It's so good. And he's like, well, your son's worse than mine. Or your son chose to be a marshal. Well, your son, it's really funny. Yeah. And even though neither of them particularly like their sons and have been terrible fathers, they still like have that sense of like fatherly pride or fatherly like defense. I think it's a really funny scene. Yeah,
it is. And the actors are great.
Yeah.
I mean, great. Everybody's really good. It is really, really good. I just can't say it enough. And I know every time Arlo shows up, you're like, oof.
Yeah, I'm really glad we're doing it like this as well. Like, obviously, now you've got 6 minutes, Deadwood, and we can talk about all that. But I think, Deadwood will always have that special place in my heart for when I saw it and how it showed me, whoa, you can do this with TV.
Yeah.
Now we're watching it in such close proximity to Justified. Obviously, Justified gives you that, I'm going to, in inverted commas, like fun factor. It has that, it's kind of cool and it's got a swagger and that Deadwood never had. So spending time in the Justified world is more appealing, I suppose, in that way because of the Leonard fun factor you get with it.
Yeah, he knows what he's doing. I mean, Elmore Leonard knows exactly what
well.
He's doing.
Yeah,
yeah, yeah. I mean, he, oh yeah, absolutely. And they know, like, they're writing about bad guys and they don't glorify them, and they're all flawed. And Chili Palmer is a hitman and a collector, but he's somehow the hero of two books. And Raylan definitely is a serial killer.
Yeah, definitely.
And that's just what it is. And and Oliphant just owns it. And there is, and again, I keep bringing it up, there's one episode of The Grinder where he plays himself, and they talk about, he and Rob Lowe, again, Ben, who've aged remarkably well, talk about doing topless scenes in shows. And he's like, well, I had to do it in that one episode. It was in the script. And then he's like, yeah, it was, and Rob Lowe says to him, yeah, it was justified.
I'm going to use a really crude phrase here, what some people call the cum gutters. You've got bits. So
yeah.
How do you get muscles there? I know. Yeah, yeah.
And when he's got his shirt, it's like, are you cold out here, Raylan?
Yes. Yeah, it's when art catches him with Ava, isn't it? Yeah,
because I'm tired of looking at your nipples. Amazing.
Yeah.
And that it really is... did look like he was getting chastised by his dad. So, well, obviously, as the show progresses and we learn more about Arlo and we learn more about Raylan, obviously the dad, Art Mullen, Arlo, seeing the three of them on screen together, Raylan really was confused.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, yeah.
Ah, what a show.
And, you know, all of this to say, you know, the fact that, you know, it's just praise and where elephants come from. We started that at the top of the show. Like, we saw him grow through Deadwood. He was good in season one and he was better and better and better. Here, he is Raylan.
He walks right in. Yeah.
He's not Timothy Oliphant. Not really. He is Raylan. And this is, you know, you talk about people being born to play a role or the role being perfect for them. And there's a lot of examples of that. This is another one where, like, I cannot see anybody else in the role.
No, it's true. It's true. And, you know, and it's like he kept working. You know, he just kept grinding. When you look at the stuff he did, like he's in the Die Hard reboot.
Yeah.
Right. He's in that. And then I'm just scrolling through a few things here. You know, he just wanted to work hard. So yeah, it was right after Deadwood. That's his thing. He did the Die Hard reboot and then he did Hitman, and that should have been good and wasn't.
No.
You know, but I get why he did it.
Yeah. Then, yeah, of course.
You know, and again, I really did enjoy Crazies.
Yeah. Crazies is an excellent horror remake. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And so he's just trying. And then, you know, when this comes at the right time, and you know, he never stopped working. You know what I mean? It's not like, but he dropped in here and it really is. But you can see even in those performances, you know, from Deadwood to try these other things and playing the grumpy dad and I Am Number Four and, you know, the whatever, that book is so much better than that movie. But yeah, he's just excellent. So I'm here for it. Everybody's given their A game. He didn't win any award for this because I feel like it's almost like people thought what you just said. Well, he is that guy. He's not acting.
He is that guy. And he's also the kind of, in, you know, like comedies. He's the straight guy.
Mm.
You know, Boyd is showy. Joelle is, you know, I don't mean this as it sounds, but, you know, she's a woman in the car. So, you know, we need to celebrate her. Or like, he is the straight, handsome white guy. So he's still working really hard, but he is just that.
He got nominated a few times, but he never did win. For it. Yeah, and of course we know why he couldn't win, because he was up against Ian for Deadwood. You're not going to beat him in your own show. But for this, he did get nominated. Now the funny thing is, and so did Boyd, so did Walton, but the only two people who actually won are America's Treasure Margo Martindale and Jeremy Davies. They both won for guest appearances.
Sure.
Margo fucking Martindale, America's Treasure. I feel like when she shows up, is it next season she shows
next
up?
Next season, yeah.
When she shows up, I think they cast her. She was just a character actor, right? And if you go back and watch Racketeer, she's like the waitress. It's her restaurant, right? And like, she's the restaurant owner. She's just been there throughout history. And then she shows up in this and everybody's like, who the fuck is she?
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
and
yeah.
She's never looked back. This was a star-making performance. And she deserves it. Margo Martindale is a fucking star. And she owns every scene she's in. And there are some scenes in season two with her and Caitlin Dever where you're like, holy shit. And that, like, Raylan's not even in it. And those two are like eating up. But it is funny. Those are the only two Emmy awards that were won from the cast were first for guest starring roles. But lots of nominations, not a lot of wins. And that's okay because they're not here for that.
No.
Here to make,
great, to make
TV.
Good TV.
They make great fucking TV. Yeah. And so we get one of the best on-screen bromances, and then when we get to the end, we'll have to decide if the real love story is Boyd and Raylan, or is it Raylan and Winona. I mean, it's clearly Boyd and Raylan.
I don't think you need to wait till the end. It's definitely Boyd and Raylan. Yep.
It is. It's amazing. It is the chemistry, and they do a good job as the show goes on. They use it sparingly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, you're gonna do your Michael Mann stuff. You know, like, you don't put Pacino and De Niro on the screen in scene one, do you?
No, absolutely not. Yeah.
And they learn to have them talk on the phone a lot. You keep them in proximity, but then you hold off. There's a scene in this, and I know I'm rambling here, but there's a scene in this when they're invading Boyd's camp and the two of them are just sitting on the ground together.
Oh, it's brilliant.
It is like the best. They forget, like, the two of them seem to forget that they're acting too, which is what's part of it. But they're having such a great time.
This is the post beer after the being down the mine. This is actually the post beer after being I find it weird, baseball. In my head, it's always American football in movies, but they're on a baseball, you know, there's the post baseball along with Johnny. Yeah, it's so casual. It's brilliant. It's such a great moment.
And then they're like, "Oh, right. Also, we're tossing your camp, and you've got,
Yeah.
this is
It's
also
just boy's got his hands cuffed behind him and yeah.
zip tied, even worse."
Yeah,
So,
yeah,
yeah. Anyway, well, this was a delight, my friend. So, Justified Oliphant season
Boys.
is back, and we'll obviously listen to you, the song on the intro. We didn't even talk about the music, which we will as the series goes on. I love the theme song. This is one
Yeah.
you said you don't ever skip. Deadwood. I don't ever skip this one.
No, me neither. So good. It's
I love
quite
it.
short. It's only like 30 seconds, but it's a good.
It
And
is. I've got the full song for us to hear because it's on the Internet
yeah,
Archive.
real.
So that means it's free.
And the end of every episode is always that dun, dun,
Dun,
dun.
dun.
Oh, I love it. Yeah.
So good. What a show. All right. And I may play a little bit of a clip of from episode 10 when Raylan does the prayer at the beginning and the cold
Oh,
open of
yeah.
episode 10. I
I love it.
laughed my ass off. I'm on the bike. That happens. And I was like, gonna choke on my own spit laughing
Boy, do
so
you mind
hard.
if I just say something to the guys? For I so good,
What a
yeah.
cold open. They learn how to do cold opens really well on this show too. And that was a banger. So, all right, my friend. Well, what's up? This will come out mid-March. What's filmography-ing?
Mid-March. Okay, sorry. I should have been prepared for that
No,
question,
it's
shouldn't
fine.
I? Mid-March. So I will be just about to enter the Fast and Furious verse, or have just entered the Fast and Furious verse, depending on when this comes out. I'm bringing the VHS boys with me, so Chris and Dave are going to come on that ride with me.
Nice.
From really interesting perspectives, because Chris has seen all of them and Dave has seen like two of them or something. So
Nice.
we're gonna see how that goes. Yeah, so we'll be continuing down the safe path. Really, we're hitting that third act, megastar.
Megastar. Mega
Yeah.
star. The Meg. The Trench
Exactly.
star. Is that what you're saying? I love that
Yeah,
movie. God
me
damn.
too.
The Trench was amazing. It was spectacular. Cool. Well, that's what you've got going on. And we're doing this. And I'm doing
We're
this
doing
show with
this.
Heath. And I'll be on the 20th Century Geek soon to
Cool.
talk The Thing. We're going to do all three movies plus the short story. So we'll have
Nice.
things to say about your sister's favorite film. I'm sure she's going to be
We
mad that
will.
she's not on that one.
Yeah, but I mean, I think she'll enjoy hearing what you two have got to say for
Yeah.
sure.
I guarantee I'm going to say John Carpenter lit a doodle. I guarantee I will say that. And that's not the first time he's done it. Or that may be the
No.
first time, but it's not, because in Christine, he definitely lights a guy on
It's
fire.
not the last time, yeah, for sure.
Jesus Christ. Amazing. But you're like, oh, why can't they make John Carpenter movies anymore? Because they don't let you light people on fire. You know why there's sparks? I've learned, so I'm rewatching a Highlander. You know why there's sparks on the swords in the Highlander movie?
No, go for it.
Because they're attached. Christopher Lambert and Chansey are strapped to car batteries.
No, I love it. Brilliant.
True. They have car batteries attached to their swords while they're standing in water. The
Of
80s.
course.
Whatever. Good God. Yeah. I can't believe Clancy Brown and Christopher Lambert lived to tell the tale. Anyway, thank you, my friend. So that's what's going on. We'll see everybody in a month. Where don't you want to say I'll make you famous every time, even though that's young guys.
For sure.
Yeah. All right. Bye, everybody.
Take care.
On this lonely road, trying to make it home, doing it by my lonesome, pissed off, flew on some. I'm fighting for my soul. God, get at you, boy. You try to vote, God, fall back. I go hard. On this lonely road, trying to make it home, doing it by my lonesome, pissed off, flew on some. Son, prepared to kill, son. A paradox of pain, baby, is real, son. Lonely traveler, ain't trying to value you. But if you're feeling tough, dog, I welcome all challenges. Ain't got no family, you see there's one to me. Might lose your post standing 2 feet in front of me. I'm pissed at the world, but I ain't looking for trouble. I might crack a grin, I ain't looking to hug you. Think about it, nobody wants to die. There's rule to this game, son, I'm justified. I'm ready to go, partner, hey. I'm on the run. The devil's hugging on my boots. That's why I own the gun. This journey's too long. I'm looking for some answers. So much time stressing. I forget the questions. I fear no man. You don't want no problems. Be eyes in the back of my head. You better not follow me. On this lonely road, trying to make it home, doing it by my lonesome, pissed off, flew on some. I'm fighting for my soul. God, get at you, boy. You try to hold God, fall back. I go hard. On this lonely road, trying to make it home, doing it by my lonesome, pissed off, flew on some.
I see them.
judging me. I'm just trying to survive. And if the time comes, I ain't trying to die. I'm just trying to fly and get a little love. Find me a down piece and get a little hug. Hook the car up, hit the bar up, clean the scars up. Hey, yo, the stars up. Hey, this is the life of an outlaw.